Welcome to Anchorage Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Anchorage Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News, and joining us from Washington, D.C., Libby Casey of APRN. Paul, sparks begin to fly in the governor's race as Ethan Berkowitz, the Democratic challenger, outlines plans and policies and takes his fight to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce.
Well, what he seems to be saying when he gets there is, hey, I'm a Republican. I'm more Republican than Chuck Barnell. So anyway, he's peddling his, during that meeting, by the way, when he had this low-tech kind of low-cost way to put Barnell down when he picked up this canister of gas,
propane
tank, and says, this is the only gas you're going to get off the North Slope, and that's how it set the tone for this. But he went on to try to peddle his Alaska ownership stake. He's got a three-pronged plan so far. One of them is would allow permanent fund dividends to be invested in a gas pipeline. A second one would offer lifetime fishing, hunting, trapping licenses, which is a fairly popular idea. And the third one, which is a fairly...
But you'd have to pay for the license.
You'd have to pay for it. But it's still over the long run. It'd be a good deal. And he talked about cutting corporate income taxes radically. This is where the Republican part, and all these ideas are Republican ideas. I have no idea why we have to wait for Berkowitz to come up with them, but here we are. And the bad news for the other side is that we have, what, 5 or 6 weeks to the election, mm-hmm. and he says there's a lot more of these coming.
Okay. Steve, meanwhile, Governor Sean Parnell responds to these challenges and attacks and alternative proposals. What's he say?
He took the propane tank off the table and put it on the ground. There you go. No, he's been responding to these things quite forcefully. He's not on the defensive. He's the incumbent. He's the guy with the target.
So he's the guy with the 30-point lead.
He's the guy with the 30-point lead. Yeah. So Berkowitz, I think, is running a good race right now. He's got to really show what the differences are between himself and Governor Parnell. And Governor Parnell's, I think, he's given as good as he's getting. So he's been very forceful. I think this is. We said this. Prior to the primary, I think this is a very different Sean Parnell. 2 years ago, when he ran against Congressman Young in the race for the U.S. House, oh my goodness, he was not a very good candidate, in my humble opinion, especially in those debates. Don Young just made mincemeat of him. Very different person this time around. He's very forceful. No more Captain Zero. He has command of the facts. He looks very comfortable, I think he looks very forceful up there. And it's shown good leadership skills, I think, anyways, so far. He's also got to do his best to minimize the target. That's on his back as the incumbent, but he's doing all right so far, and so is Berkowitz.
Thanks, Steve. Libby, does the governor's race in Alaska rate even a blip in Washington, D.C.?
Is Sarah Palin running? Then, if she's not, then the answer is no. I'm sorry, guys. If Sarah Palin tweeted about it or started talking about Sean Parnell a lot, then people in Washington would be talking. It's just not considered a big race on the radar. But historically, Alaska's governor's race hasn't gotten a lot of outside attention, say that a California race would have. Now, Governor Parnell will be coming to Washington, D.C. next week, in part to attend the funeral of Senator Ted Stevens. So we'll see if he does anything other than all business. But indications that I've gotten from his professional, staff in the governor's office and also from his campaign staff is that he doesn't necessarily plan, meet and greets and fundraising activities, but we'll see if that actually happens. One thing that I did see today was a press release that came out for a Parnell-Miller meet and greet up in Anchorage, that there is going to be a joint meeting, community picnic for those two candidates, kind of an interesting alignment there.
Steve, actually, Libby, that meeting, you're absolutely right. It's a picnic, and it's in Wasilla, which is a hotbed of Miller support right there. So Parnell, you're right. You're absolutely right. They are getting together today, and in fact, it's going on as we tape this program. But it's up in Wasilla, where Joe Miller enjoyed quite a bit of support.
And they lucked into a beautiful day for it.
Yeah.
Paul and Bill Walker, we keep hearing that he might run a write-in.
He might not. There's no way to tell. He's been for a couple of weeks suggesting, well, maybe I will, maybe I won't. A lot of observers are starting to think he may have missed the boat.
Well, the wise guys would say he's looking for somebody who, for $300,000 who wants to be lieutenant governor.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay. Steve, sometimes I get the feeling that Governor Sean Parnell is running against President Obama. He brings them up repeatedly, or brings up the administration, or Washington, that evil place where he's going soon.
Right.
How effective is this, and is there, in some level, a limit to how much you can complain about Washington?
I think that there is a limit, but it's a smart strategy. He obviously, President Obama is not real popular up here in Alaska, and he has also worked very hard, Governor Parnell has, to link Obama and Mr. Berkowitz together, and that's something that Mr. Berkowitz has had to work on to try and distance himself from the president, and so while Governor Parnell has attacked President Obama and then tried to link the two, Obama and Berkowitz, Mr. Berkowitz is doing his best to say, okay, well, look, we got to talk about statewide issues and that, you know, not federal issues. So, you know, there's some definite strategy that's being played out on both sides there.
And from the Democrats' perspective, necessary strategy.
Paul,
Rasmussen, the polling outfit, had a poll here recently, which probably had some pretty good news for our Senate candidates, but also seems to have had some good news for the gubernatorial candidates, showed Sean Parnell seemed to be commanding.
Yep, 54-34 over Berkowitz, 20-point lead. He's, oddly enough, in each of their respective parties, each of them have 84% of their respective party support. A lot of independents in this thing. So we'll see how they shake out towards the end of it. But right now, it's 20-point gap. That's some ground that Berkowitz has got to make up.
Yeah, they have to make it up in a hurry. The U.S. Senate race continues to dominate the news here in Alaska. It's on the front page of the newspaper virtually every day, or newspapers, and frequently near the top or at the top of television reporting. Libby, the Lisa Murkowski write-in. Let's start off by asking you, how was it received in Washington, D.C.? And we noticed that she was not removed from her Energy Committee post.
Well, that's right. Her write-in bid was not well received by the establishment Republicans here in Washington, especially the leadership in the Senate, which, ironically, Lisa Murkowski was part of as of a week and a half ago. She was one of the select five people in the Senate who runs the Republican conference. She was like the lowest, most junior member and the only woman. And so a lot of people were using that, you know, sort of tired saying they threw her under the bus, which was sort of the impression. But they didn't really throw her under the bus too far, or they didn't throw her under multiple buses, because the Senate Republicans decided not to take her away as the ranking member of the Energy Committee. As you mentioned, Michael, a real feather in her cap, one of the big accomplishments that she has down here in D.C. This position as the top Republican on that committee gives her a lot of say and power in negotiating with Democrats when it comes to things, oil and gas regulations, renewable energy policies, nuclear power, things like that.
But we should note,
so
Libby,
she still retains that.
Yeah, I have to interrupt you because I can't give you any hand signals.
Interrupt me anytime.
The committee's not going to be very active until after the election, when she's either won or a lame duck, right?
That's right. They have a couple of subcommittee meetings next week, but nothing related to Alaska, and nothing big on the radar. It's a lot of minutia. So, and then they're gone, then everybody goes home to campaign. There may be a lame duck session after the November election, but by then we'll know who the winner is. So as people went into this, Republicans went into this closed-door meeting this past Wednesday to decide Murkowski's fate, the winds were blowing that she was going to be demoted. I mean, that was really the common knowledge. Senator DeMint, the conservative guy who's really backing Joe Miller and a bunch of other Tea Party-affiliated candidates across the country, was gunning for her. But when he emerged from the meeting, I and other reporters talked to him, and he basically had no comment. He had lost, and the folks who supported Murkowski won. Now, you got to think about what's going through their minds. I think some of them think she doesn't necessarily have a chance of winning this write-in, and so they sort of think, why kick her while she's down? But others are saying, well, but if she does win, if she does prevail, and we've booted her, we've really reprimanded her, that gives her so much power when she comes back. She's not going to necessarily want to look upon us kindly if we've really gone to an extreme level to take her power away. It's sort of funny. I heard somebody say this past week that she's sort of the establishment candidate now running as a rogue outsider. So yeah. there's some fun going on there. Both she and Miller are finger pointing and saying, well, this guy's got the support from the folks in Washington, and that she's got the support from the folks in Washington, but Miller actually does, although Murkowski's still got some friends here.
Libby, can Lisa Murkowski raise any money in Washington anymore?
It's a really good question. Perhaps. Her chief of staff, Senate chief of staff, Karen Knudsen, who's very well connected here, in her personal time has been working the phones, trying to connect with supporters and lobbyists, folks in D.C., holding conference calls and such. The campaign says they've actually had more success fundraising online, just grassroots fundraising, in the past week since she announced her write-in bid than they had during the primary. I haven't seen hard numbers on that. That's just what they're saying. But people here are wary because they don't want to necessarily buck the guy who won the primary, Joe Miller. And so I think it's going to be a tougher road to hoe.
Steve, what is the roadmap to victory between now and November for Lisa? What do you see?
I don't think it's been printed yet. I think they're making it up as they go along right now.
We'll find the road when we get there.
Right. I think the first thing they have to do is they have to correct the mistakes they made during the primary. Obviously, that just did not work at all. And there were a lot of reasons for that, but they weren't very aggressive. They let Miller skate on so many different issues. And then when the Tea Party came up with its last 2 weeks, a very effective campaign on TV and radio, they did nothing to really counteract that at all. So I think that certainly has to be corrected. One of the things that I saw that was different a week ago Friday when she announced the write-in campaign was almost right off the bat when she took the podium, she started to talk about Ted Stevens. That was something you just didn't really hear anything about in the last, in the primary campaign. And then, of course, there was the tragic crash that took Senator Stevens' life. And that made it very difficult to use Senator Stevens.
And Steve, you've seen the new ad, she has television ad,
right,
where she looks the camera in the eye and says, I need your help.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty powerful ad. It goes on for a minute. Usually, our campaign spots are usually 30 seconds. You're in and out. This is like a minute long, and she's pretty honest. It's just her. There's no flash, no dance, no graphics, no nothing. It's just her.
One of the things that puzzles me about this is how do you explain to the voters you made a mistake?
It's tough to do. She kind of dances, not dances around it. She kind of goes up to that line. She
a bunch of outsiders with a bunch of money.
Yeah, and she says, I like you. I'm not satisfied with the outcome. Now, you lost, so I guess I wouldn't be satisfied. But or does that mean that I'm not satisfied with the way we ran the race? It could kind of mean two things there. But again, you already see the changes in her tone and you see the changes in her tact. So I do believe, I take it as, you weren't satisfied with the way you ran the race and you weren't satisfied with the outcome it produced. So there's got to be some big changes. But
and John Bitney, the campaign manager, has been asked to do other things.
That's right. Kevin Sweeney, who is an aide in her Senate office, a very capable guy who knows Alaska very, very well. Kevin is now running the campaign. She's brought on some other advertising agencies, and so there will be a new approach to all of this. I think that she has to invoke the spirit of Ted Stevens in some way, shape, or form in this part of the campaign, because and whether that is quoting him like she did in her announcement, or asking help, enlisting the help of Lily Stevens or Catherine Stevens, which I'm told they will appear in this campaign. I think that she's got to pull out all the stops if she's going to win this one.
Thank you, Steve. Paul and Joe Miller. What's up with him these days, the last few days?
He's spending a lot of time trying to clarify positions that he either took or had or didn't have earlier in the campaign. Everything from should the state take back its, should the federal government give all its land to the state, federal spending, education, everything. Everybody's now comparing what he's saying now to what he was saying before. He blames the media for distorting his positions. And I think at this point he's trying to smooth the path, if you will, forward. But he's got to spend some time kind of convincing well, people you know, where, it, where
I
he
was
is.
Going to say to both of you, it really is a contrast with the Stephen Murkowski Young tradition to have the U.S. Senate candidate of the Republican Party, and metaphorically speaking, get up on the back of a flatbed truck and yell at the voters, and if elected, I will give you less.
Yeah.
And the voters all cheer wildly.
That's
so
insane.
The contrast with Stevens that you brought up is going to be quite interesting.
It is, and I think Lisa Murkowski and Joe Miller, they both have to do some adjusting, in my opinion. I think, you know, you've got Senator Murkowski, who's been painted as an inside the belt beltway kind of person, and she's part of the problem, but she also has to get out there and tell people, wait, you've got my experience and you've got my leadership and you've got my seniority, and I can bring home all the stuff that Alaska needs to build its infrastructure, but isn't that
and
some
if this
of the
guy
problem?
Keeps his promises, you're not going to like it. That's
right,
part of what
right.
she's saying.
And then he's going the other way, but he's got to kind of come back a little bit, in my opinion, to the middle as well, not because she's painting him as an extreme candidate, you know. And now, as Paul says, he's kind of coming back and saying, well, you know, wait, I'm not that extreme.
Well, I know the Democrats who are watching this show, some of them anyway, would be complaining, why aren't you talking about the Democrats?
Yeah.
After all, Scott McAdams won his party's nomination.
He did.
Paul, please wither Scott McAdams and tell us about the Rasmussen Senate poll as well.
Rasmussen Senate poll puts him dead last at 25 points, Murkowski at 27. Miller up front with 42. After the primary, apparently, at least one of the polls I saw showed McAdams actually losing a little bit to Murkowski. The thing, he's having to fight for space and time. Lisa coming back into the race sucked all the air out of the room. This is a fight now between Murkowski and Miller, and he's on the sidelines trying to get attention, trying to get money, trying to get some footing, at least with the national media and the media here in the state. So he's got a tough fight ahead of him, just trying to get recognized for who he is.
Steve McDonald.
Couple really quick points. We talked to Scott McAdams right after the primary. He's a very popular figure in Southeast Alaska. He's mayor of Sitka. He's hoping that popularity will carry the day in Southeast. He's also hoping that, a Democratic stronghold in Alaska has always been the villages, the bush. He's hoping that he can carry a large amount of that population. And then he's hoping that Miller and Murkowski kill each other off. And then he kind of comes out with the support in Southeast, maybe enough in the rail belt and a large portion of the village. So that's what he's hoping for. A real important point with this Rasmussen poll. In the Rasmussen news release that gave these numbers, and like Paul said, 42% for Miller, 27% for Murkowski, 25% for McAdams. They didn't mention Lisa Murkowski's name to the people they were polling because her name's not on the ballot. So basically they just said, who do you favor in the U.S. Senate race, Miller or McAdams? And the people who were being polled had to supply the Murkowski part if they wanted to. That was the explanation that was in the poll, and that was also something that the Murkowski
folks. Well, don't you think anybody who's in the biz would remind people that if you're using a write-in, it's very hard to poll with any detailed accuracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it is. Yeah. It's very difficult.
Among other things, because those people have to fill out the ballot properly.
Right.
Yeah,
it is a very.
Let's get Libby back in here. Libby, Begich sends more staff, more aid to McAdams. Tell us about that.
That's right. Four staffers are now up, taking leave of absence, going off and working for McAdams. It's a pretty normal thing, you know. If you are working for a member of Congress who's not facing a challenge, it's pretty common as things slow down in Washington to get farmed out to go work for a campaign you believe in. But Begich really is throwing his support behind McAdams, and this is a demonstration of that. Noticeably absent, however, is more support from the National Democrats. I mean, the national group that sends money and support up to various states from Washington for Senate races, not doing a lot. There are actually movements on Facebook and places like that saying, hey, call the Democrats, call the National Democrats and tell them to help McAdams out. They have not gone on the record or on tape with me to explain sort of their position. They say he's a great guy, we support him, but it's more of a put your money where your mouth is issue.
Okay, the Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend, or as it's sometimes called here, the Permanent Dividend Fund, we're about to get our checks at $1,281 from the state. Steve, I wouldn't say this is a holiday exactly, but it's always been a special day in Alaska.
Oh, it's always marked on the calendar. Yeah, yeah, $1,281 and a boost to the economy. And yeah, it's a day that Alaskans really look forward to. It's kind of like the Super Bowl because, you know, the weeks leading up to the big announcement, the media is always trying to predict what it's
going
to be.
And the commercials.
Yeah. And the commercials. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But, yeah, so now the sales start, right? And people start spending it or saving it.
Paul, is the dividend a permanent part of the Alaska political landscape as far as we can see? I mean, as far as what else have we done with the permanent fund? That we put it in the bank, we've saved it, and we have the dividend.
We put it back in the bank.
So is the dividend going to be with us as long as the sun shall shine?
It's the third rail of politics in Alaska. Only a complete boob would stand up and say, let's get rid of the permanent fund. Those days are gone. Early 80s, people actually stood up and said, let's get rid of the permanent fund. Yeah. And I don't think they're with us anymore.
No.
But politically, it's there. It would take courage beyond measure to suggest getting rid of
it. Or something else.
And it's an economic engine worth more than $1 billion a year. So business loves it. Everybody loves it. Snow machine manufacturers love it. They all love it. I think it's here until time ends. It's going to be the last thing that goes in Alaska will be the dividend, I promise.
When we have Miami Beach on the North Slope.
There you go, which could happen next Tuesday.
Okay. I can buy a lawn chair.
Libby, we used to hear in Washington, D.C. that people would grouse about Alaskans getting, quote, free, unquote, money. Do we hear that anymore, or they moved on to grouse about other things about Alaska and the rest of the country?
Yeah, I think they moved on a bit. I mean, it's kind of below the radar. People do say to me sometimes, wait, don't you guys get the free money? But I don't think it's as big of a concern right now. It's just not as high profile. I'm sure if they knew more about it, they'd be, you know, totally jealous and appalled. And there is always the contradiction of, why did the Fed send you guys money? If you have so much money, you can, you know, take a bath in it. That complaint will never go away until the permanent fund checks go away. But it's not really big on the radar right now.
Okay. Libby, let's stick with you. Lisa Murkowski has left the Senate essentially and is campaigning for re-election, but the Senate continues to do business, and this week they took up the military Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation that the Obama administration and the Democrats wanted and didn't have a lot of success.
They didn't. Republicans just would not budge on it. Basically, the defense authorization bill did not even get to the floor to really start getting debate. The Democrats couldn't get enough votes to break cloture. It was a complicated situation. Everybody pointed fingers. Harry Reid, who's of course the top Democrat in the Senate, attached a DREAM Act, an immigration provision, onto it. And some people said, well, you're just playing politics. Don't Ask, Don't Tell is part of this defense bill. It's not even like it was tacked on. It was part of it. And there were finger pointing on both sides about, well, this actually maybe could have passed. There were at least one Republican, maybe even more, one of the main moderates who said, I actually would vote for this. I just don't like the way Democrats are conducting business. Senator Begich said, look, let's just move this forward. Let's take a good vote on it. Let's have a discussion. But in the end, the politics got in the way. And what Senator Begich says is, you know, this bill would not immediately lift Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It would wait until a study is completed that's due in December, and the president and top military brass agree that ending the law would not hurt troop morale or battle readiness. So this wasn't going to clear it off the books. It was just going to set the stage for if everybody, you know, that needs to checks off on it, it can move forward and go away. This is a big blow, though, to gay rights groups and people who are hoping this could move. Really, right now, not a lot's happening in Washington. It looks like the Senate and the House will go back home after only one more week here next week. All they're probably going to do is pass a continuing resolution to keep the government open and functioning, and then they're going to head out of here.
Okay, and very briefly indeed, what do you hear from Congressman Don Young? Who's he supporting in this Senate race?
Just talked to him today, hot off the press. He is not supporting either candidate. He said he's called them both, and of course both Republican candidates, since he's a Republican. He's called Lisa Murkowski, called Joe Miller, and explained his position. He says Joe Miller won the race fair and square. He's the rightful nominee when it comes to getting the Republican nod, but he has a lot of loyalty to both Lisa Murkowski and her family. So he's sitting this one out. He also did say, though, that his kids are really supportive of Lisa Murkowski and said, you can't endorse Joe Miller. We just won't let you. So he is going to watch from the sidelines.
Okay. We have a couple of minutes left, and I want to turn to something here with Steve. Steve, one of the things that really interested me and surprised me in the Rasmussen poll was how high the negatives are of all three of the Senate candidates, when you ask people favorable, unfavorable, that question. Miller was around 50%. Scott McAdams, who probably the majority of people wouldn't know him if they saw him, it was at 46%, and Lisa Murkowski at 44%. Yeah. How do you explain those high negatives for all these people?
Well, I think it's just a reflection of how people feel about Washington, D.C. these days. I think it's people are angry. I don't think Washington has really gotten its arms around how angry people are across this country. And it's not just the folks in the Tea Party. I mean, they just do a really good job of expressing it in a very organized way. But I think it just goes right down to folks who have become so disenchanted with politics. And I
Paul,
think that's what it reflects.
Just very briefly, Paul, many people say it's the economy, but we didn't have the banking crisis here, the housing crisis, the financial crisis.
It's still the economy. Despite that, people are worried about what's going to happen to their retirements. They're worried about their 401ks. They're worried about the government taking more and giving little back.
You know, one of the things, real quick, I know we're down to seconds. One of the things that came out in this race, and I don't know if it would be a phenomenon, if you can describe it as such, there were a lot of people who cast votes against Lisa Murkowski because they wanted to send her a message. They said, we like Lisa, we want her to be our senator, but I want you to be a different kind of senator.
Yeah, some of my good friends, as it turns out. Yeah. Thank you for joining us here on Anchorage Edition. We'll see you next week right here.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Anchorage Edition at anchorageedition@kakm.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Anchorage Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.